visible.
Which maybe need
to. But I made it. I'm a clock on the phone. I didn't turn the car. I think I was gonna. Is that your new truck?
Yeah.
Nice.
You gonna be here more than 30 minutes?
It's a Chevy.
Yeah.
Oh, but still, I mean, it looked pretty.
You gonna be here more than 30 minutes?
This is 2014. It's not brand new.
No, but it looks brand new.
Yeah, it's.
How many miles?
What's that?
It had 43 and a half.
That's 30 minute parking.
It's 4 years old.
It's 10,000 miles.
Why did you move?
Did they tow with it?
Okay.
No.
Happy to do that.
It's, you can't read, why? I'll bring it up to you.
Nice.
Because the old, the original one is gone.
But if you haven't heard, anybody hasn't heard from Pete, we might as well start.
I think we have to, yeah. We got to assume that he's not.
All right.
We got to assume that he's not here.
Call the meeting to order. Reminder to the public that all the meetings are being recorded, which I think you just got going, didn't you? Public comments on matters not included on the agenda. Highlight consent agenda. Anything we need to pull for further discussion? Motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Discussion, and this is just on the budget, just as a preliminary committee appointment. Well, we have to have it in by 1st of June?
End of May, 1st of June, I called and checked with, actually Justine's out on maternity leave.
So the office is crippled.
Right.
Yeah. If she's not there, it's crippled.
So as near as I could tell from the temp person, the packet will come out about the third week of April, and it should, I checked to make sure we had the right emails and stuff. And the person that I spoke with seemed semi-knowledgeable, so I will continue to follow up on that.
Yeah.
After you and I spoke,
I don't think.
But it's basically, third week of April, the packet will come out, which will give us the date that it has to be.
Typically, it's the third weekend or the very early of the fourth weekend of May, and so we have to vote in May on the preliminary budget,
right.
And to in order to get it in time to them. So
right.
It just makes sense to appoint the committee.
And then
they have time to put it together and here's the major difference this year. The major difference this year is we have data for Highlight, mm-hmm. whereas last year we didn't have data for Highlight, and
right.
So
it's a little bit more.
You can start right now and kind of have a pretty good idea. And I mean, I would presume Jason will be on. You can bring facts and figures in. I'm sure Lana's looking forward to trying to put together something. I mean, I don't know what he's going to delegate to her, but that is the face of excitement. And so I think there you go. The only other thing that dawned on me while I was driving today is that I would recommend to the committee to, you know, a year ago, I think we were talking with Ed, and if you want to set that baseline for the medical insurance, where it's an automatic, increases get automatically included in the mill so that the operating budget no longer continues to get hit by what we know happens every year, rising medical costs. And so I think that's part of the budgeting for May.
And we couldn't take advantage of that. We got a 10% hit.
Yeah, and we don't have a baseline stat, so the best we can do is a baseline this year.
Right.
And go there, and I mean, I think the budget committee should look at that and consider that and look at what that's done to operating costs and decide whether or not Highlight wants to do that going forward.
Yeah.
And there is a, when that preliminary budget comes up, there is a spot in there for that calculation. The one thing that Ed, when we visited with Ed, he didn't know about whether we could go to inception, or when the clock would actually have to start ticking. If we go to inception. That wasn't a question that
I think you gotta establish it. So I think this, the way I understood it and kind of anything I've seen since is that you establish a baseline, which would be this year. Once you enact it, you establish a baseline, and then that's
from there forward.
But he said there, he didn't know for sure when we asked that.
That is correct.
It is a little bit of an open question, and so we can follow up on that.
Like anything with the budget process,
right?
You ask a specific question, and you get kind of.
And obviously, if we chose to go that route, or if we could pursue inception date, that's the best opportunity for us.
Because we can recoup that 10%.
Right.
Well, or whatever it is.
Or whatever,
whatever it is. Right. Whatever the increase is, you can recoup.
Right. Which,
so it's not 7%.
It's not fixed. Yeah, it's not fixed.
Last year.
Yeah, based on last year's number 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Is that what you're trying to get, is see if you can back up and capture that 10% increase from last year?
From inception.
Yeah. Okay. Inception of
Highline.
Okay. Gotcha. So, you know.
So you just need to probably appoint a committee.
Yeah, but it's probably a good idea to put the treasurer on there, I would imagine. I didn't know whether Pete worked with Chuck last year.
I'd be happy to work with Pete. Yeah.
And then I'm
and
sure.
Jason, yeah.
Do you really want Jason or?
Well, I don't know.
He's never been helpful.
Oh,
he makes him.
But you have him there, so why?
Because you appointed him. I can't control what you do.
Oh. Sorry about that.
Yeah, you know, that's not what you told me at the time.
No. do you think you can handle it without Chuck there?
Oh, God.
Yes. It'll be difficult.
Oh, yeah, right. And then you'll handle it.
Well, then Walt, Pete.
Okay.
And what was your name again?
Fred.
Fred. Any comments on the budget discussion? Chief's report.
All right, as of writing this report last week, we had run 111 calls. Our roster is pretty much stable at this point. We have a full house of residents, 8 here at Sourdough. Although at Ray House, as of writing this, we had only one left there. One of them moved in here, one of them got his own place, but the last man standing is no longer standing, so he has moved out. So we're at a big goose egg for the Ray House at this point. However, Colin Prado, his lease ends in May, and he's planning on moving in there, and possibly either Anderson or Charlton as well. They're renting a place right across the street in that new neighborhood, and I think they're looking for something different.
Okay.
So hopefully we'll get that.
It's still working better than planned, isn't it?
I mean, it's still better than it's sitting there doing nothing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
And gives us an opportunity.
Yep. Oh, and we have one other guy, Eggers, who wants to move in. Yeah, so, yeah, we'll have other people in there in a month or two.
Yeah.
It's just all lease type stuff, and they got to finish out what they got.
What's the story with the shed there?
Well, I had that guy contact me and said he wanted the wood, and then he just flaked out.
Okay.
So it's just nothing at this point, unless he gets back to. I don't know if he's just been. He's a builder down in Big Sky. I don't know if he just got busy and distracted or whatever. Winter came and he decided he didn't want to do it, but yeah.
Well, the door's been closed on and everything, so I mean, at least it's secure.
Yeah, I told those guys they had to keep that shut and not. I think they'd go in there and play reindeer games. I don't know, but it's gross in there. It's really not good. What's that?
Is it good training?
Well, because of our EPA regulations and. We'd have to remove all the shingles and anything that was non-wood to legally burn it. Unless someone was out there with a rock rake or something and there was a spark and then it got out of, I don't know. I mean, anything could happen, really. Yeah. But no, that's the problem with doing, people call us occasionally and say, hey, I have this old house, do you guys want to train? And what they really want is us to burn it down for them. But
yeah.
It's still an opportunity to train, but we would be violating county and state regulations for open burning by intentionally burning any structure that had all the plastics and anything that isn't a standard combustible removed. So it's kind of ruined all the fun of training on real structures, to be honest. We used to do it a lot in Big Sky because there was a lot of teardowns down there that it was a benefit to them that it wasn't so much to haul to the dump. And we would set fires in there, you know, I don't know, 10, 12 of them, put them out, reset, do it again. And then when it was all over, let it rip.
And I think the last we did was that boiling house on 19th. It was kind of sketchy even then, I think, to get it all accomplished.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of hoops to jump through.
Yeah, it's pretty tricky. We are about to begin our Spring Recruit Academy. In fact, they're doing interviews for potential candidates out in the Bay right now. So we'll hopefully have that going in a couple weeks. Everything's on schedule. Brian and I did go to the Pierce Factory in Appleton, Wisconsin, and that was well worth every penny. There's no question about it. We were able to see things that we didn't know really existed and entertain some options. Most notably is that we were speccing out, and I know this won't mean much to you, but an Aero XT chassis. When we got there, we found an alternate chassis that's $20,000 less money that will do everything we want it to do. That was worth it in and of itself, was that we found another option. It's called an Enforcer chassis that will completely work for us and is actually cheaper.
Just as good, though?
It is. I mean, it's a little different. It has a different... So the Enforcer or the Aero XT has 13-inch frame rails, and the Enforcer has 10-inch frame rails, but they'll sleeve the frame rails in it. And we talked to the engineers and said, okay, with deflection and everything else that you get in a frame, is, you know, for the amount of water and the wheelbase and the size of the truck, is there any reason that we shouldn't be looking at this Enforcer? And I mean, this is their moment to upsell us. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh no. He says, we're building ladder trucks on that Enforcer chassis. So you guys, from a wheelbase and weight standpoint, you're not at the upper limit of that at all.
And how long has that chassis style been in use?
Enforcer? Yeah, I don't know, 15 years.
No cracking issues?
No. And Pierce has a lifetime warranty on the frame itself, so it's not like we're out of luck after 36,000 miles.
Usually the double frame's better because you flex a little bit.
Yeah, so, you know, and that's the engineer was explaining that, you know, taking that 10-inch frame rail and sleeving it, you'll actually get a pretty good ride out of the chassis. But he said, I wouldn't hesitate for a second to build that truck on that chassis. So that was worth it just there. But, you know, there was a lot of things that we looked at that we said, you know, we can do, you know, we can take this idea and replace some of the things we were looking at and actually save some money doing it.
It hasn't been all that long since you've been there, so this is just technology and a different chassis that we haven't looked at before.
Right? Yeah.
Did you even look at them in Big Sky?
Oh, yeah.
You were doing that?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and the other thing that we were able to work out with the engineers is they thought, you know, all of our engines now have two hose trays in the front bumper that each have 200 feet of inch and 3/4 line. So we have two of our pre-connected attack lines on the front bumper, and we really like that configuration. But for years, Pierce wouldn't build it that way. They said, oh, we can only put one hose lay in there. So we had kind of settled on, well, we'll have one hose lay in the front, and then we'll have one at the pump. But when we got there and talked to the engineers and stuff, they said, no, we can do that. We can actually make that happen, and so that was a nice thing.
So was that a disconnect between like the sales rep not really taking it back to the engineers and pushing it?
Well, I went through it when I was in Big Sky when we built the last pumper, and we talked to the engineers, and at the time they swore they couldn't do it. But I think they've changed their front bumper, and they used to only allow, I think, for a 22-inch extension, and now they'll go to a 26-inch extension. They don't like, what they don't like to do is the way our trucks are built is the frame rails come up and just think of it as being about even with the radiator, you know. And then our trucks have extensions built out that aren't really supported by those frame rails and pierce because they're so engineered and they don't want anything to fail. They don't want any type of funky thing built where it doesn't have the right cantilever and all that stuff within the frame rail to do it. But obviously they've changed something in how they can do it. And they were actually able to show us a few applications, not exactly like it, but similar. So that's a good thing.
How many trucks did they have in various stages of build?
Over 100.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah. And we were able to go outside. Another thing we were able to do is, you know, we have generators on all of our trucks. And our salesperson said, you know, with these LED lights now and everything, we really don't think, you know, you probably don't need a generator. And we were a little leery about, I don't know. Well, what we had him do is outside, they had probably 30 pieces of apparatus that were in the almost finished portion. So they were parked outside. And we had him take us there at night, and he started all of them up, pulled them out, turned on the scene lights so that we could actually see how much illumination with certain, because there are so many different models of LED. I mean, it's overwhelming at times, but we were able to get it down to, okay, we don't need the biggest light. We can use this size here and this size here, and really the illumination that we got. So not doing a generator is going to save us between $10,000 and $20,000.
Plus it opens up a bay, doesn't it, on the track?
No, it's a hydraulic generator, and they usually put most of the stuff up top for that. But it's still, it's a cost save.
But it's weight and maintenance. Yeah.
What's that?
It's weight and maintenance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's another thing to go wrong, for sure. And then some of the way the pump and roll systems work in the trucks, which this is not going to use an independent motor driven pump with another diesel engine, but we caught a few little tidbits that we weren't happy with at all. So we're going to have to go back to the drawing board of this can't work this way. And the primary thing is the way that they configure it is to pump and roll from the cab, put the truck in neutral, you engage the pump. Then you engage pump and roll, and you can now control with the foot throttle and your RPMs how much water's. It's poor man's pump and roll, basically, but it'll work for us. But the problem is that what it doesn't allow us to do is pull up to a structure that's on fire, put the truck in neutral, and pump from the cab. Because the only way you can do that is by putting it in drive, which engages the pump and roll. Now you're using the foot throttle, and they have a 1200 RPM cutoff for the pump when you're in pump and roll. So you can imagine one of our driver operators in the excitement of a fire easily pushing the accelerator pedal exceeding 1200 RPMs, and then the pump cuts off as you're trying to put the fire out in the garage. And that's such an essential way that we do business that we just have to go back and say, no, we need a way to engage the pump and then have a throttle control in a switch to open, you know, the valve to the front bumper. It shouldn't be anything, but had we not gone there and really looked at it and studied that system, that might have been overlooked. And the funny thing is I talked to an unnamed other fire department that has a truck being built right now who uses it in a very similar way that we do. And I asked them, I said, did you know it doesn't do it this? And they're like, no, we had no idea. And then they try to say, well, but that's not a big deal to us. I'm like, okay. So it was really a valuable trip. And we just got revised documents from our salesperson yesterday. Brian and I went over them today. We have another meeting with him on Friday. And we're trying to accelerate this because he said any orders put in after May 1st are going to see an increase in cost because of the tariffs on steel and aluminum. So we would like to get our order in before May 1st. So one of the things I was going to ask you at this meeting, and it dovetails well into this, is if you guys think we could do the May meeting at the last Tuesday of May, so we have time to get it out to bid and have...
Okay, the May meeting, I thought you said May 1st is your problem. So you're talking
April.
Okay.
The last week of April. So we can talk about that later, but that's why...
I need a little more time to get things together.
Yeah, I mean, it only gives us next week to create the spec, and then... Because we'd like to put out the bid for 3 weeks, and then... It would the bids would be in on the 20, I think it's the 24th is the fourth Tuesday of April. So we can talk about that when we get to that section. But that's why I'm going to ask you to do that, because I don't want to pay the higher price for the increase.
They said
steel.
How much I was going to be here.
They don't know yet. Okay. But he says that they just made the announcement to all the salespeople that after May 1st, there will likely be an increase in
cost. So if we get to the last Tuesday...
So they're bringing all of their steel in from
China.
China.
I'm sure.
Well, it's going to influence domestic price anyway, regardless. Yeah. But the last Tuesday of April, that still provides enough time. There won't be any iterative process.
Hopefully, again, we're going to have to hustle to get it done, because we're in a condition where we're waiting for information from them. Now, we can short that a little bit by just not getting confirmation that they can do what we want to do and just write it and let it go at that and see if they can do it. But what we've been trying to do is get an idea of the cost before we put it out to bid, so that once we get the bids, we're not in a position where now we're thinking about what are we going to cut. And you know, I want to know now what the costs are going to be before we put out the bid. I'd like to do any cutting now, so that it doesn't become a big deal when we do the bid openings.
So they just have to accept. They just have to.
What's that?
Well,
no, we can cut stuff out of the. Yeah, we can cut stuff out of the bid. That's not considered a change order, because we can.
I was going to say, is it all that important? I mean, I understand your thought process,
yeah.
But if you write what you want and put it to bid and they come back, if you decided to cut something.
Well, the only thing is, the big thing is this pump and roll thing, because...
Is that the only pump and roll they offer?
Without an independent motor-driven pump, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but we're looking at what a pump under cab configuration, and I can show you guys after the meeting some pictures, but we could go back and just do a standard pump configuration that sits between the cab and the fire body if we can't make what we want to work with that under cab pump configuration.
And then you get a different pump and roll with that pump then?
Well, that's what we're trying to get answers for. That's the answers that we're waiting for, is if we have a standard pump configuration, like what the water tender out here looks like, could we still do that pump and roll, that poor man's pump and roll? And would that be easier to create the system where you can... Yeah, we're waiting for engineered answers right now on that.
How long do they figure they're going to take to give you those answers?
I don't know. But we're have the meeting on Friday, and we're going to tell them, hey, man, this has got to be done by Friday of next week so we can get it out to bid for 3 weeks. So, yeah, we've definitely put the pressure on him and said, we got to get this going. And he understands with the cost of steel thing. He's very sympathetic to where we want to be.
How long the build time is it?
It can be up to a year.
So it is just a year. It's only 12 months.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on... There is probably 3 or 4 months of variation there, because if, say, the city of Los Angeles puts in an order for 15 pumpers and St. Louis does the same thing.
Absolutely. What you might see with the steel price increase.
Yeah, but what I'm hoping for is, because the start of most fiscal years and budgeting is July 1st, that by starting in May, we'll be ahead of the big orders. That's what I'm hoping. Yeah, I know. It's a crash.
Yeah, everybody's going to be playing that game, I think.
I don't know.
If they're in the talking stages.
I don't think it matters.
Well, contractors are already playing with steel and rebar.
So the other thing that we talked about at the factory is I've started to have some second thoughts about not doing a front drive axle. So what I asked them was, is there a way to do a less expensive front drive axle configuration in that truck? And what Pierce has built for years, but a lot of people don't use anymore, is a spaghetti drive system. Are you guys familiar with? So what it does is, instead of, it takes the transfer case out of the system. So the drive line goes to the rear diff, and that's a special rear diff with the Eaton power divider on it. And then it sends a second drive shaft to the front drive axle. So what you get is a four-wheel drive system without high and low range. You just have, you can choose high or low range. Of course, we would choose high range. But it's just simple four-wheel drive without the cost of the Oshkosh transfer case. And so what we'll probably do is have them bid it out as two-wheel drive and as four-wheel drive with that. But he said the estimated cost on that is about $20,000 for that system, whereas with the transfer case, it's more like $40,000. It's a very expensive transfer case.
How reliable is that drive line?
Extremely. Extremely. We talked to their driveline engineer, and he said they're probably more reliable because you don't have a transfer case. You have a less mechanical process. It's just gearing in that Eaton power divider that sits in that rear differential. So he said, pound for pound, it's probably more reliable than a transfer case.
What's changed your mind on the front drive axle?
Just feedback from the firefighters and icy roads and other things. And I haven't settled on anything, but it's just made me at least want to entertain that. I'd just be afraid to end up with the truck and be kicking ourselves on snowy, icy days. And maybe it's because we had a bad winter this year. I don't know.
But you were talking about putting on those
on-spot chains.
On-spot chains.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, that's something you don't use just on icy roads. So, I mean, that's more of a
get-out-of-situation.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just made me second. You know, I had my initial thoughts. Yeah. And then while we were there, when we had that driveline engineer at our disposal, and I said, is there a cheaper way to do this? And he said, yeah, there is. And I asked about reliability and all it. And it's just something for us to consider when we get
so
to
the. So are you doing a single axle engine?
Still a single axle, yeah.
Okay. Some of the question I have, some of the reason we've done all-wheel drive is, at least in my opinion, if you get a tandem axle, it will drive the steering axle.
Right.
You don't get that so much with a single axle. And number two, if your truck's balanced better, then you can get more of that weight. For example, tandem axle gas drain trucks, you can't get enough weight on the front axle to steer them, which is a little bit of a challenge we have at times. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're trying to turn in a driveway and it just wants to go straight, turning up single axle, don't have that problem as much. And again, where the diesel motor's, a third heavier than a gas, maybe half, twice as much, you get more of that weight on that steering axle. My Kenworth, for example, is helpless because there's so much weight on the steering axle. I've never had it really want a tractor, even if I lock it in, because you got that big cap motor hanging.
Right.
And because it's a setback front axle a little bit, that's even put more weight out there than what we've used initially.
Right.
A loaded truck on a nice road, which you see semis and stuff all the time, not too much of an issue getting around. With us, those were the...
Right.
When we were looking at all-wheel drive, was a lot of the reasons we did what we did because of gas motors and balance and... You know, conventional cabs,
and it's not 100% win. There are some downsides. You know, that Marmon Harrington front drive axle, the cramp angle on it's only 35, 36 degrees.
Yeah.
And on a non-drive axle, it's like 42 to 44 degrees. So, you know, there is some penalty for it. And I don't know if it's just been a bad winter and But we definitely have used four-wheel drive more in our trucks this winter than we have in the past. And we just had that dumpster fire over by your house, and one of our trucks slid off the driveway. And that really made us think about it, too, because without the front drive axle, we wouldn't have gotten out of the ditch there.
Wouldn't you?
No. We had to lock everything out, too, to get her out. And it was just going off the driveway into the lower portion. So it just made us think about it a little harder. And
so in climates where they're selling those different four-wheel drive systems, the spaghetti versus the transfer case, I mean, what's the balance of sales?
Oh, I think nowadays they do a lot more transfer cases. And I don't know why. I mean, in the Valley, Gateway has an almost 20-year-old Pierce truck with a spaghetti drive. Fort Ellis has an almost 20-year-old Pierce truck with a spaghetti drive. And Amsterdam has. I think they all bought their trucks, and none of them have ever had driveline issues, anything with them. Their only complaint was they didn't have four low. But
going out the door now at the plant, the ones that they sell with four-wheel drive.
They just sell so few of them, period. I mean, I would say 1%, and I'm guessing, but it's really low as how many four-wheel drive. Did we see?
There wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, out of the, 100 trucks that we looked at, there was not one four-wheel drive truck. Now, the one that Big Sky has ordered is four-wheel drive, but, yeah. But they went full transfer case and bells and whistles. The one thing we did learn when we were there is that we are not looking at purchasing an extravagant truck.
That is
one thing we learned. It is unbelievable what people put on their fire trucks, whether it's paint jobs. There was two trucks going to one department that had 5 air horns on it. The bells on the front bumper with the string going into the cab for the parades that they can ring the bell. That's a $5,000 bell. I mean, it was just amazing I'd say half the trucks we looked at had custom stitching with the fire department logo on the backs of each seat, and I cannot even imagine. I didn't even ask what that cost, but crazy how fancy. A lot of the trucks now at the pump panel, they have a camera or a video screen, and there are cameras mounted all over the truck, and it looks like a security system, so that the driver operator can see what's going on all sides of the truck. I mean, pretty extravagant stuff. So we did feel good that we went there thinking we're not buying a fancy truck. We're buying a pretty plain Jane truck compared to what the vast majority of people are buying out there. So, yeah. They fed us terrible food. Oh, God. Brian actually ate a deep fried steak.
So disappointing.
In yourself. For eating.
Yeah.
He ate a deep fried steak. The idea sounded good to me, but I got salmon instead.
That's his cooking it, probably.
Yeah. Brian looked a little overwhelmed. Yeah. So, any other questions about our visit? The one thing that I found, I will say that I almost lost it with our sales guy, because we started going over the tires that we wanted on the truck. And we just started buying a Michelin tire, and we really like it on the rears. It has a lot of siping, and it's really nice tire. So we gave him the tire model, and he punched it in the computer, and he goes, "Oh, those are kind of expensive." And I was like, "Yeah, I know truck tires are expensive." He says, "No, those are about $2,000 a piece." And I said, "We pay $500 a piece for those tires." I said, "I'm feeling a little abused right now." $2,000 a piece. I said, "Fine, I'm bringing my own tires." "Well, we can't do that." Yeah, so we are not going to get those tires. Obviously, it will end up being cheaper if we buy the junkiest tires they own, and then we can bring it back here and put different tires on it. I am not paying $2,000 a tire for those things. Ain't gonna happen. It was terrible. I was really upset at the moment.
But that's because InterWest gives us the government discount and everything else, isn't it? I mean,
well, they give us totally reasonable pricing on it, but I'm sure that a factory
75% discount.
But I'm sure a factory like Pierce gets the quantity pricing as well, and that's really sticking it to the buyer. It's just like the radio that was going to cost $900. I mean, it just they really get you on little items like that. So we're trying to decide what stuff we just are going to do in-house and what stuff that we just
have
to
have. So did you get a better feel for that after you were there? I mean, obviously the tires, you got a pretty good feel for that. But did you get a better feel for other items?
Yeah.
The radio, the tires, other items?
Yeah. Like most apartments, they just, when you look at the truck, it's got flashlights mounted in it. They get the ladders and the pike poles, and all that stuff is marked up. They get the radios put in it, marked up. It's all marked up. I mean, how much do they say LA City's? I mean, LA City uses
$860,000
for a standard pumper. No pump and roll. I mean, just a standard pumper. But they do so much. They want a turnkey engine. It shows up and they drive away. Yeah.
And really, a lot of this stuff you'll just take off the truck and replace.
Exactly. Yeah, we don't have to buy ladders. We don't have to buy pike poles. We don't have to get any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Fans, chainsaws, all that stuff we are going to be able to salvage off the engine that we're going to get rid of.
That's another thing about four-wheel drive. It still won't be without four-wheel drive in the other rigs.
What's that?
We'll still have a four-wheel drive because we're not selling all our
four-wheel drives. Yes, we're not selling all. Yeah, just one.
But this is the specialty rescue truck, and we won't have another rescue.
Well, that's...
Yeah, it will be our rescue truck. Yeah. So, again, it's something we'll think about. We'll look at the bids and see what the cost is and all that stuff.
So do you have an idea what the salvage value is of the...
Brian and I were just talking about that today, and I don't know, but what I was telling Brian that I'm considering is there are businesses nationally that sell used fire apparatus and they take a percentage of it. And it may be worthwhile to consider having a broker try to sell the truck for us, even if it costs 5% or something. I think given the market in Montana, if we can spread out nationally, we may be able to get significantly more money for it. Because I've watched used fire trucks in this state and they just don't go for much. And so it may be worth our while to try to use a brokerage like that that has a national audience to sell to places like Colorado and Alaska and other places that might want a six-wheel drive or four-wheel drive engine.
Refresh my memory, what year is that truck?
It depends on which one we're getting rid of. And we have not made a decision on which one is the worst yet.
So what are the age brackets we're looking at for the different?
One is almost 20 years old and...
2000 to 2003.
Yeah, it'd be between engine 6.2, which is our oldest engine, or one of the twins. And we're trying to figure out which one is worse.
So a rescue truck will replace what we call our construction engines?
Yeah, so it's going to replace our current rescue, but because we're building it as a rescue pumper, we can actually get rid of one of our pumpers and eliminate that from our capital replacement plan.
How much water does it haul?
We're speccing 1,250 gallons.
We do 1,700 now?
We have 1,700. In engine 6, our newest engine is 1250. So we're trying to make it the same as our newest engine. Plus, you know, it's great to say, oh, we want more and more water, but then the wheelbase gets longer and longer, and then it becomes undrivable. Yeah, it's just, now you're in a tandem act. I mean, it just, there's a lot of penalty, and we, in talking with them, 1200, 1250 is about that limit where you can keep the wheelbase. What were we looking at?
Wheelbase.
Yeah, 191. That's a really doable wheelbase for a fire engine. I think engine 6 is 240.
Engine 6 is 266.
makes it hard to get around.
Yeah.
So we're trying to, you know, we're balancing. It's that same thing of, yeah, we'd love to have 3,000 gallons of water, but we need people to be able to drive it. And we need, you know, kind of weigh out the safety and the drivability and all those things.
And that's the thing, just water size.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So just an update, our 911 dispatch center is switching over to a completely new CAD system. That CAD system will be active in October, but I'm in this committee right now that's meeting weekly because this new CAD system, everything is different than our current CAD system. All of our call types, the way that mutual aid run cards are developed, it's completely different. So we're computer aided dispatch. So it's basically the computer system that runs how the calls go out and how they're processed.
Like who gets mutual aid or who gets called for mutual aid, stuff like that.
All of it. So we're having to rework the entire system into something usable. Because this new system, it's called Zerker, it's really geared towards law enforcement. So it's gonna be a tough road to integrate it. But what we're trying to do is simplify some of the mutual aid request systems and create something that's easier to use for the department. But that's been a hobby of mine now for the last month and will continue to be probably until June.
So is the fire council excited about the change? They must not be.
They're not. Well, some of them are not excited. There are others who see this as an opportunity to make Gallatin County into Los Angeles County. And so that's a little challenging. We've had some really interesting suggestions come from, I'm sure you know who, of, you know, how this system should work. Ideas like everybody should dispatch the same resources to every single call type. Which doesn't even, like, so if there's a medical call, everybody would dispatch an engine and an ambulance. Well, but we don't have an ambulance. And like Big Sky, they go to medical calls all day long at the ski area. Why would they take an engine? I mean, why does it even matter that we're all doing it the same way? It doesn't. I mean, what we do on our own calls, less mutual aid, it doesn't matter. I mean, we're having to weed through a lot of concepts and ideas to get to where we need to be. But we've added also
replacing the system that was such a struggle to keep functioning anyway.
I don't know that the CAD system,
or is it a different system that I'm thinking?
Yeah, all the radio systems with all the sites around the county have been a constant struggle. I don't know that the CAD system has been a constant struggle, but in the past, the CAD administrator was a bit of a struggle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so that made things difficult. But and this new system isn't bad. It's just, it's incredibly different. It's kind of like spending years working on four-cylinder gasoline Toyota motors and then getting a big diesel commercial truck. I mean, it's very different in the way that, like, we have zero alarm, first alarm, second alarms now. Zerker has no alarms. So we had to figure out a way to do mutual aid without alarms, because they don't have alarms in that system.
So really, we're, as a fire department, or fire community is gaining nothing in dispatch.
No, and we rarely do. But I think we will be able to configure it to work.
We have to.
Yeah.
I don't get a choice.
Yeah. So that's why I'm dedicating a day, a week, to going to these meetings, because it's important. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. And how I put down here, our sourdough crew spent an entire weekend cleaning out the old building, which produced an extraordinary amount of garbage. I had all eight of them go in there and put ribbon and tag all of their stuff so we could determine what had been left by previous people. And we've warned people for months that we were going to go through there and throw everything away. And that's exactly what we did. And we just took a trailer to the dump full of junk. So it looks a lot better in there. We have a lot more space and much more organized.
You didn't tear the apartment out yet, though.
No. No.
A little nervous at home there, Dave?
No, I wanted it for more, a bigger snowplow truck.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we have plenty of space.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Good thought, Paul.
Plenty of space. But no, that was a long overdue task, and the guys did a great job with it. Except they didn't put little things in garbage cans, garbage bags, they just stacked it all out there. So when Chris and I came in on Monday to load it all up into the trailer, we were picking up little pieces of trash, so we had to put it all in bags.
Oh, you didn't furnish bags for them?
Oh, there's plenty of bags. But they got it all out of the station.
You were not clear in your directives?
Yeah, I knew, yeah. I should have mentioned the bags. And other than that, no firefighter injuries, just significant apparatus equipment damages.
That's good. Thanks, Mark.
Any public comment on the chief's report? Trustee activities.
I guess as discussed, we'll start on budget activities.
Yippee, huh?
Yippee.
Announcements. I guess we're to the point now we'll talk about next month's meeting. And you would like it to be
the 24th, if we could.
No objection for me.
A different time during that week doesn't help or hurt you.
As long as we can get it done before the end of the month so that we can put the order in. Yeah.
Given the way the 24th falls, it kind of makes sense to, it gives you still a few days in case there's a...
We would want to put it out to bid on Monday the 2nd, have bid closing on Friday the 20th. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, we would have a little time to play around with it. But it makes it tight because we, like I said, we'd have to get it, the bid spec done by the end of next week, the 30th, so we could have it ready for the paper.
And you feel as though that's doable. I mean, that's going to be a high part.
We're going to make it happen one way or the other.
That's what I thought. I thought you'd say that.
Whether we're just making it up, or we'll make it happen.
As far as I'm concerned, whether it be the third or fourth Tuesday, there's a possibility I may not make it. It's too early for me to give you an answer. I don't know yet.
But it might not matter because you might miss the third week anyway.
Yeah, that's what he said. Yeah,
I might miss the third or the fourth. Yeah. It's unknown. I will definitely miss one of them.
We'll miss the one we're not having then.
Is that so much to ask?
Boy, was that obvious. I said, you know this far in advance, really?
We already moved it for you, so you should be okay.
Yeah. So is that it? Are we doing it on the 24th?
I have no problems with that, so.
Thank you.
Okay. Barring, I do think we ought to see what Pete's up to. Is it fair to say that you guys would be amenable to, it's the 24th, if he can't make it.
Or if you day or two.
Then maybe we'll do
yeah,
it
we
Wednesday.
Need to wait a little bit.
But we'll do it that week. One way or another, it'll be done that week.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll say tentatively the 24th.
Tomorrow. You want to contact Pete tomorrow.
Okay. I'll have Lana's going to get a hold of Pete tomorrow and see what his schedule looks
okay.
like.
Okay. Yeah. Anybody else other than Mr. Tate have an issue with different day that week?
Just messing up my calendar to my last meeting. I have to reconfigure it now.
Oh. I'm open.
Cool. So we'll see where that goes.
Okay.
Well, I guess now we'll move to executive session and.